Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. When the Trump administration reinstated and expanded the global gag rule on his first day in office, they banned overseas NGOs that take U.S. global health funds from engaging in abortion-related activities. That includes providing services, information, counseling, and even referrals. Trump's global gag rule also applies to what these NGOs do with their own non-U.S. government funds. And then in March, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced that the U.S. would crack down on NGOs that give funding to groups that provide or promote abortions. Today, the gag rule implicates almost $9 billion in U.S. foreign assistance, which affects many organizations that previously did not need to comply with it. Annually, there are more than 25 million unsafe abortions worldwide, and this leads to millions of injuries and tens of thousands of preventable deaths. This summer, the International Women's Health Coalition released a report called Crisis in Care: Year 2 Impacts of Trump's Global Gag Rule. It says despite its intent of discouraging abortion, the global gag rule has not achieved this goal in the majority of countries receiving U.S. reproductive health and family planning. Instead, it actually led to increases in unsafe abortions, and it also has led to an increase in unplanned pregnancies. Later in the show, we will go to Kenya to speak with Diana Mareka, a member of Trust in Indigenous Culture and Health, which is a partner of the International Women's Health Coalition. Joining us now is Françoise Gérard. She is president of the International Women's Health Coalition. She is a longtime advocate and expert on women's health, human rights, sexuality, and HIV and AIDS. Françoise serves on the board of the Women's Funding Network and on the advisory committee of the Health and Human Rights Division of Human Rights Watch. And Françoise joins us in studio. Hi, Françoise. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Rose. It's great to be back.
Well, it's great to have you. And I love having you on, and I always wish that we were talking about something more positive. I mean, the positive side is that women around the globe still are fighting under horrendous conditions. But
they are.
We do have to start off by talking about the effects of the global gag rule. Can you remind us? Every Republican president reinstates it. Mm-hmm. The Democrats get rid of it. In Trump's case, he actually expanded it. He went further than George W. Bush.
That's right. I mean, when it was first enacted under Ronald Reagan in 1984 and reenacted under the Bush administration, it was applied to family planning funding, which is still sizable. You know, today is $600 million a year of family planning funding that is spent in mostly sub-Saharan Africa, but also in South Asia. And but Trump took it much further because he decided to condition all of U.S. global health assistance with the global gag rule, which is about, we're talking about $9 billion a year, which is a very, very important sum for these countries, as you can imagine, who have small healthcare budgets and rely on the United States' support and assistance, and sometimes technical assistance as well, to serve their populations, especially underserved populations.
How many people, because it's women, girls, men, boys, trans people,
yep,
it affects
everybody,
everyone. So
everybody.
How many people are we talking about here?
Millions and millions of people. It's hard to know how many, but, you know, a country like Nigeria, where, you know, you're easily talking in tens of millions of people affected by this, because so many in the population are poor and require, you know, subsidized services in order to be able to access family planning, HIV testing and treatment for sexually transmitted infections, safe abortions, etc. So, and the way it operates is that by preventing organizations that accept U.S. funding from doing anything on abortion or even speaking about abortion, you're forcing providers, healthcare providers, into a very difficult and unethical choice between accepting U.S. funding and stopping the provision of a life-saving intervention, or accepting or refusing the funding and then seeing your funding cut, and then you're obviously having to close clinics and you're serving fewer people. Neither of these are a good thing, and it's placing providers in a very tough situation, a real moral dilemma, as the people told us when we carried out the research in the countries where we did.
And we'll talk about that research. But when we're talking about a clinic, let's say a nurse or a doctor, mm-hmm. just having a conversation with someone about an abortion or referring someone.
Yeah, that's not allowed.
But how is that enforced? Because these are private conversations in
right.
rooms.
I mean, obviously, that's a good question. But what the researchers showed us is that there's been an increase in enforcement activities by USAID. You know, USAID, our government at work in foreign countries, has offices and staff on the ground. And what they've done is they've had sent mystery clients. They have made a lot of phone calls. They've paid a lot of visits. And frankly, for a lot of these small organizations that are, you know, the only health provider in a community, they're really afraid of losing their funding and they're not sure, you know, which way to go. And when the big US of A comes in and says, we're looking at you and we're watching you, they're afraid. They believe it, you know, and I think they have good reason to.
Has this happened before where people with USAID sent fake clients?
It happened under George W. Bush. We heard anecdotally. Now we're actually collecting the information much more systematically and in real time. You know, we're not coming to ask ex post facto. We're actually doing this while the policy is being rolled out. And so we know that this is happening right now.
And we'll talk to Diana Moreka in Kenya in about 40 minutes. But how do these clinics prepare for this? Because if you're talking about under Obama, we had no global gag rule for 8 years.
No, that's right.
Well, let's start with George W. We had 8 years under George W. We had the global gag rule. Under Obama, we did not. Mm-hmm. Under Trump, it goes even further. Mm-hmm. So how do the clinics change their practices so drastically?
Well, the reality is that they don't. Actually, what we've observed now, because we're looking at it in real time, is that after the global gag rule was rescinded by Obama, a lot of organizations couldn't snap back and start providing abortion care. You know, you need to train your people, you need to have supplies, you need to actually, you know, reach out to people. They need to trust you as a provider on abortion. So, for example, in South Africa, we found out that a lot of the damage continued to operate like radiation in the universe, if you want, you know, and that a lot of conversations on, and abortion is legal in South Africa. It was legalized, you know, after liberation in 1996. And so, and all the work that had been done to train providers, talk through their values, you know, do value clarification with providers, disappeared under the global gag rule because so much of the South African health budget was dependent on the U.S. on HIV, which wasn't affected at the time, but governments always err on the side of caution. And so, you know, a lot of the services were shut down. People who were reluctant saw, you know, confirmation of their prejudices, and discussions at the ministry level were closed. And so a lot of the activists told us, you know, no, the damage continued even after Obama reversed the policy. And now, of course, with the expansion of the policy, it's a double whammy, right? It's much harder.
What explains the Trump administration expanding the global gag rule? We'll talk more about just how evangelical his administration is.
Yeah.
Does that explain this? Because mm-hmm. when we were preparing this show, I was thinking about the show we did last week with Jeff Charlotte about the family.
Yeah.
And this is a very secret conservative evangelical group that travels overseas to implement and back policies like anti-gay marriage, anti-choice policies. Mm-hmm. And in the film, we learned that Trump actually wanted Chris Christie to be his VP, but the evangelicals said, you need us. Mm-hmm. You got to choose Mike Pence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He is one of them.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So would you say that explains this?
I would say so. Yes, absolutely. I mean, there is definitely, you know, they looked at what tools they have to affect health policy abroad. And certainly U.S. foreign assistance, the money, is a very good way to do so, where in a way you don't have to reveal your full agenda. You just say, well, these are now the conditions of our grants. And when you negotiate a new grant agreement with USAID, these are now the conditions. You know, you don't need to reveal the whole thing. What it does, though, it is it demonizes abortion services and abortion providers. It isolates the services from other health care. It shuts down the debate in countries where the law is clear that abortion is legal, such as South Africa or Nepal. It prevents civil society organizations, local groups from engaging in public discussions and even from holding their government accountable. Imagine, once you have a law, like in Nepal in 2002, that is adopted to make abortion legal and available, you still need civil society organizations to engage, make sure services are provided, they're of good quality, they reach hard-to-reach districts. So you need to engage in debates about this issue. And to be gagged means you're just losing your power as citizens. The government is off the hook. There's no more accountability. It's undemocratic, right? It is... But it's effective. It is working to cut access to safe abortion services. What it does, though, is drive women, and young women in particular, and marginalized people to unsafe services, clandestine services. So what we're seeing is not a reduction in the number of abortions, which is allegedly the desire, but actually an increase in the number of unsafe abortions. So it is cruel, and... And they know that that's actually the impact, but I honestly think they don't care. They want to punish women for having sex, you know, outside marriage or, yeah, outside the control of the males in the household. Yeah, so that's the intent. Yeah, and it is, you know, steeped in that Christian, white evangelical Christian thinking.
So you all conducted an extensive report, Crisis in Care, Year 2 Impact of Trump's Global Gag Rule. Mm-hmm. And as you said, one of the major takeaways, it's very long, it's about 60 pages when you print it out. The number of unsafe abortions and unplanned pregnancies is going up in sub-Saharan African countries and South Asian countries.
Yes, that are exposed to the Global Gag Rule. That's right. That's right. And we're not surprised by that, right? If you're cutting funding to some of the best organizations that provide sexual and reproductive health, who are the groups that are reaching the most at risk, the most marginalized, who go to the remote areas, who work with young sex workers, or, you know, if you're cutting services to those populations, you shouldn't be surprised that you're going to have, you know, more unwanted pregnancies and unsafe abortions. And because groups in general don't just do abortion, right? They do a range of sexual and reproductive health services. If they decide that they won't sign on to the policy, as has happened with a number of groups, then their funding is cut. And that means they're able to provide less contraception, less HIV treatment and testing, less treatment for sexually transmitted infections. So it affects all of the health provision that was provided by these organizations, not just abortion, right?
So this, you could argue that this is actually killing even more people.
It is. I mean, we can say that for sure. We know that.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Today we are speaking with Françoise Gérard, president of the International Women's Health Coalition. She's a longtime advocate and expert on human rights, sexuality, and women's health. And today we are talking about the Trump administration's deadly global gag rule. This is reinstated by every Republican president, but this one actually expanded the rule. And there's a new report out. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. About year two impact of this rule. And as Françoise said, we know for a fact that unsafe abortions and unplanned pregnancies are increasing in sub-Saharan African countries and South Asian countries. If you have any questions for Françoise about what is happening overseas, and, well, I mean, advocates say the only way to truly deal with this is to get rid of the global gag rule. Mm-hmm. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. How would we get rid of the global gag rule?
Because it's...
Or how would we do it?
Yeah, we can do it. We can do it by law. It's an executive order, right, issued by the president in Trump's case, within the first 72 hours of his presidency. It was clearly a priority that, again, you know, the right-wing Christian groups had made sure that he would act on very quickly. So we need a law, and we need Congress to act to do that. And there is a bill already in Congress. It's called the Global HER Act, Health Empowerment and Rights. and it would repeal it or, you know, end it legislatively permanently. And we have a lot of support, actually, within...
Hello? Sorry, not sure what that is. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. So we have a lot of support in Congress. We have actually a very large number of sponsors, over 140 sponsors in the House. And we also have close to 46 sponsors in the Senate. So it's not out of the realm of the possible that if we retake Congress fully, we can actually get this law passed and end this noxious policy once and for all.
There have been a few debates. There's one tomorrow night for the first time. The top 10 candidates will be on the stage. Abortion hasn't gotten that much attention, especially overseas. Where do these presidential candidates stand on the global gag rule? Do we know?
That's a good question that, I mean, I can look into further. I mean, based on the position, certainly, of some of the leading candidates, I do think we would have their support. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you know, the leading candidates have been very supportive on reproductive rights. Perhaps less so Joe Biden, but the others, you know, clearly very supportive. So I think we would definitely have their support.
Because you do so much work overseas, Françoise, and you're in touch with so many people on the ground, can you talk about just the major impact U.S. policy has on people around the world, especially when it comes to reproductive rights? I feel like because there's so much attention on the latest tweet, what is happening to the most vulnerable tends to get sidelined. Or reporters are doing really good work, but it just that kind of work doesn't get the attention that it deserves.
Right. And that's why we went, you know, with local civil society organizations to look at what is happening in Nepal and Kenya, Nigeria and South Africa, because it's not that easy to actually go and find out, you know, this kind of level of detail. And what we found is that U.S. foreign policy in countries that are dependent on U.S., you know, generosity for building up their health systems and serving their population, what the U.S. does has incredible impact. For example, in Nepal, there was U.S. government funding to reach people with family planning, contraceptives, in 11 remote districts of Nepal. Nepal is a very difficult country to get around in, with, you know, remote valleys. And so this was reaching these people with family planning services they badly need. And when the global gag rule was reinstated, the local organization, the local foreign Nepali organization that was the partner of the government in this program, decided that they couldn't sign on to the global gag rule because, again, they were part of the fight to legalize abortion in Nepal. They weren't going to renege on their basic principles. And so they walked away from the proposal and you know, are no longer a partner of the government. And the government needs civil society organizations to reach these remote areas. They just don't have the capacity to do it themselves. And the thing is, in Nepal, there's no other organization standing in the wings ready to swoop in and execute this work, right? So the government told us they had to shut it down because they couldn't figure out how they were going to actually implement it. So we're talking tens of thousands of people, women, young women, who would have had access to modern contraception they badly need and now don't. And that's incredible hardship.
The last time we had you on, we were talking about other countries that were going to step up to provide this money so this wouldn't happen. Yeah. Whatever happened with that?
Well, there's been a number of funders, especially European funders, but also Canada, who have come in. The problem is the size of the contributions. You know, the U.S. is, in absolute terms, the largest funder of global health programs around the world by virtue of our size. And so there's been some compensation, you know, but nothing like what is needed. And when we interviewed people on the ground, they said, look, you know, we have to decide, do we take $80 million from the U.S. or $8 million from Sweden? You know, it's that level of magnitude, a 10 to 1. So it is a really tricky decision for them. And some of them have decided not to walk away from U.S. funding and stop providing referrals and services on abortion.
So in the case of Nepal, what are these people doing?
They're doing what they've always done, resorting to clandestine abortions and taking their lives into their hands, you know, when they don't want to have yet another child. So that's just the reality.
How can, other than fighting the global gag rule, because it's going to be in place at least until 2020,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So in the meantime, what are the options?
Well, yeah. The other thing that some of our partners are doing, and I think Diana might speak to that, is trying to increase local support for services. So they've really been doing some advocacy with local governments at the county level to increase the budgets. You know, it's not going to be sufficient, but it is a step forward. And perhaps, you know, longer term, the only step forward, you know, the only way forward is to have more sustained support locally for these services and not be so dependent on the U.S., since the U.S. is such an unreliable partner. And, you know, the other thing I wanted to point out is the fact that under the Obama administration, the U.S. actually played a critical and very positive role in helping those countries integrate the service provision. So, in other words, making sure that HIV, contraception, abortion, all that was in a one-stop shop type of clinic format. Because, of course, that's much more economical, right, and much better for patients. And now what we're doing with our current policy is actually breaking up the investment that we had made in improving the services and making sure they were accessible to patients in, you know, in much more convenient forms. So it's even you know, crazy that way, irresponsible that way, that we're actually undermining our own investment, which was the evidence-based way to go and the more cost-efficient way to go.
So in the case of Nepal, for example, how has this impacted other health issues like HIV/AIDS, for example?
Mm-hmm. What we're seeing in countries where that are really dependent on the U.S. for HIV funding, like South Africa, which is a better example, mm-hmm. is that there's been, again, a fracturing of HIV services from the rest of sexual and reproductive health. And that makes no sense for the women of South Africa, because pregnancy is a real fact of life, right? And so you need to have access to both your HIV treatment and care, as well as your contraception and your safe abortion. And if you're a woman living with HIV, you need the full range of services, especially, you know, in the context of trying to prevent mother-to-child transmission of HIV. Safe abortion is one of the key interventions. Obviously, if you don't want to transmit, you should have the option to terminate, as well as, of course, receiving treatment, which is very effective to prevent transmission to the child. But all the options have to be on the table. And now what you're doing is separating all of that and providing no referrals. So women are getting their HIV treatment, but they don't know now where they're supposed to go, because the provider has been gagged and can't even give you a pamphlet with an address of where to go.
Wow. Quickly, before we go to break, and we'll talk about this also after the break, since you do a lot of traveling, you go to UN meetings, you meet people from around the globe, how are people in other countries responding to this?
There's a lot of outrage, to be honest, you know, because this is perceived certainly in sub-Saharan Africa, which has experienced so much of that, as a colonial type policy, very imperialistic policy, where the U.S. feels that it can come into a country that has had a democratic debate on the issue of abortion and women's reproductive rights and just say, well, we don't care about that, and we are going to use our money to actually impose our views, or not even our views, the views of this fringe minority of, you know, evangelical Christians and conservative Catholics. And that's not even our own policy, because in the U.S., abortion is still constitutionally protected to this day. So, you know, that's hubristic and that's imperialistic and that's very condescending and dismissive, and they feel it, right? And so there's been quite a lot of outrage. Now, they're also, the activists have told us, they're quite disappointed that their own governments are not standing up more strongly to the U.S. government on this issue.
I'll ask you why that is after a break. Today, we're speaking with Françoise Gérard. She is president of the International Women's Health Coalition, and they are out with a new report called Crisis in Care, Year 2 Impact of Trump's Global Gag Rule. And they have found that it has led to increases in unsafe abortions and unplanned pregnancies. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's conversation, or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You can also send an email to yourcall@kalw.org. Or you may post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or tweet us at yourcallradio. Remembering 9/11 or not remembering 9/11 is the topic at 1A, 11 o'clock, 1/2 hour from now here on KALW.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with former New York Times labor reporter Stephen Greenhouse. He is out with a new book about the current state of labor and unions in this country. And then Friday, it's our media roundtable, and we will be speaking with Ali Latifi. He'll join us from Afghanistan to talk about what is happening on the ground there. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. If you have feedback for us, you can also email us. And if you'd like to sign up for our podcast or listen to past shows, head over to yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about how the Trump administration's global gag rule is affecting people overseas. According to a new report from the International Women's Health Coalition, it has resulted in an increase in unsafe abortions and unplanned pregnancies, especially in sub-Saharan African countries and South Asia. Today, we're joined by Françoise Gérard, president of the International Women's Health Coalition. And if you have a question or comment on this issue, we'd love to hear from you. A number of people overseas say, you Americans really need to work to end the global gag rule, and this could happen via executive order if a Democrat wins next year. So if you'd like to have, if you have a question or comment about this, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. And in about 10 minutes, we will go to Kenya to speak with Diana Mareka, member of Trust in Indigenous Culture and Health. They are a partner of the coalition. Françoise, before the break, we were talking about, you said that governments that are affected by these policies haven't really fought back against the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. What explains that?
Yeah, when we asked the activists locally why they think their government hasn't been more vocal, some of them cite, you know, the colonial mindset affecting their own governments. But to be honest, there's also the fear of being shut out of other meetings and of other funding than health, because this administration is vindictive, right? And so there's a sense that if you stand up, you will suffer really severe consequences. The other reason, to be honest, is also the confusion that's been that surrounded the rollout of the policy and the implementation of the policy. Frankly, for a lot of these governments, it's really difficult to understand what is going on. And when we asked on the ground, you know, a lot of organizations that have either signed on or thought about, you know, refusing to sign, they said it was extremely difficult for us to figure out whether we should sign or not sign, because the U.S. government, as it has rolled this out, has not offered technical assistance for us to understand exactly what we were agreeing to or not agreeing to. And there's been a lot of fear and, as a result, a lot of over-implementation of the global gag rule. You know, for it's important to know that it has. It contains exceptions. For example, it would allow organizations to continue to provide abortions in the cases of rape, for example, sexual violence, even with U.S. funding. But because of the fear and the confusion, for a lot of organizations, they prefer to shy away from the whole thing altogether rather than work through the exceptions. And the same has been true, I think, for governments to try to figure out what they're supposed to say about it, exactly what they should be denouncing. It is extremely confusing. So our policy, and I think it's on purpose, to be honest, that there's been no accompaniment to local organizations on the ground to know exactly how to think about this.
When we're talking about sub-Saharan African countries, how has this affected treatment for the Zika virus, for example?
The Zika virus, you know, has been more of an issue in Brazil. Mm. But obviously, you know, if you're affecting some of the...
I'm sorry, I meant malaria, right?
Malaria. No, it affects malaria. It affects also tuberculosis. It affects nutrition services, child vaccinations. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is...
All across the board.
All of it, right? So any organization that provides a comprehensive package of services for maternal and child health with U.S. foreign assistance... Even if it's not most of the budget, even if they're just taking, you know, 10% or 5% of their budget, all of their funding becomes affected. So whatever money has been provided locally, whatever money has been provided by European donors or private foundations, all of it is affected, because that's the way the gag rule is designed, is that once you take $1 of U.S. money, everything is subject to the global gag rule.
John Nichols wrote a book called... Members of the Trumpocalypse, I think that was the title. And in the book, he said that one of the reasons why Nikki Haley was chosen to be the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations is because she is so extremely anti-choice.
She
would bring that to the United Nations. Before we talk about the Andrew Bremberg, who has been
chosen for Geneva.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what effect did Nikki Haley have on the UN and how these issues are talked about?
Yeah, we saw a radical change in the U.S. Posture on sexual and reproductive health under Nikki Haley. It took a few months to manifest, you know, as they settled down. But once they were in place, in negotiations, the U.S. would stand up and say, we can't agree to the words reproductive health or we can't agree to the word gender equality, the phrase gender equality. Yeah, it was that extreme. And we'd say, governments would say, why can't you agree to reproductive health? It's been agreed for 25 years in international negotiations, including by the U.S. The U.S. was actually one of the proponents of the concept of reproductive rights in international law. And they say, well, because it might mean abortion. I mean, you know, it's mind-boggling, right? It is absolutely mind-boggling. And they became so extreme, and it's still the case that, I mean, their policies haven't changed yet, and their posture hasn't changed at the UN, that people can't work with them. You know, other governments can't sit down and negotiate in good faith with the U.S. because they're so extreme. And even when they agree to something in a preliminary negotiation, when we get into the final room for the agreement, then the U.S. objects. Uh-huh. Yeah. So you can't trust them and work with them.
What is at stake if Donald Trump wins again next year for women and people, I should say, overseas?
It's really terrifying to try to imagine what that could be. Certainly, they'll continue with the global gag rule if they don't cut all the funding. Because while they've used the foreign assistance to do this to other countries, they've also constantly agitated about cutting funding, you know, cutting funding to the United Nations, cutting funding to the World Health Organization that is currently fighting the Ebola crisis in Africa, cutting funding for family planning to the United Nations Population Fund, continuing all those policies and increasing them. So, yeah, it is terrifying because a lot of people will suffer and die as a result. Mm.
Today we're joined by Françoise Gérard, president of the International Women's Health Coalition. They do incredible work overseas. They've got a new report out called Crisis and Care, 2-year impact of Trump's global gag rule. And you can find that at yourcallradio.org. Now I would like to welcome Diana Morakai to the show. Diana is a member of Trust in Indigenous Culture and Health in Kenya, and they are a partner of the International Women's Health Coalition. Hi, Diana. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thank you very much for having me.
Wow, our connection is great. I'm so glad we're connecting with you via Skype. So, Diana, we have been talking about how Donald Trump's expanded global gag rule has affected people overseas. Can you talk specifically about how it has affected the women and the men and the girls and the boys that you work with in Kenya?
Yeah, Rose, you're correctly, you're right on that. The global gag rule by and large affects women, girls, and youth, and generally people who cannot afford healthcare in Kenya. So in the research that we did, we talked to an organization that declined to sign the policy and therefore had to shut down a clinic that was providing services to women and girls, about 76,000 women and girls that were accessing contraceptive services. So they had to shut down that clinic and therefore affecting other services, not only abortion services, but HIV counseling, treatment, and malaria and cervical cancer. So in Kenya and generally speaking, in many African countries, when a clinic closes, it not only affects abortion services, but a wide array of services. So we've seen that as an impact in Kenya. And we've also seen a decrease in access to contraceptive services. We documented an organization that had to close a program that was providing contraceptive services to about 40,000 women and girls. Wow. Yeah, that is huge. It was huge.
That is huge. So you had to close these clinics. How did the community respond to this?
Well, it was a huge shock to the community because the services that were being provided were highly subsidized. And as I said, we're targeting very vulnerable communities, women and girls. So therefore, what that means is that these women and girls will not be able to access contraceptive services, which will then lead to them seeking unsafe abortion options, which will then lead to, you know, unnecessary deaths and, you know, injury as well. So it was a huge shock to them because it affected other services like HIV, malaria.
Diana, how long have you been doing this work?
So we began partnering with IWSC since 2017. So last year we did our second report, and this year we are on our third report to document the impact.
What was the response when you found out that the Trump administration was actually expanding the global gag rule? How do you all prepare to deal with so many extreme restrictions?
Well, it's hard to prepare for such a thing because the U.S. government funds a huge percentage of the health sector of Kenya, about 60%. So actually having the global gag rule limits, you know, other organizations that provide safe abortion services, including post-abortion services and contraceptives, to fully do their work. So for us, it was a huge setback because now these organizations had to make a difficult decision whether to, you know, sign on to the global gag rule or continue with providing healthcare for women and girls.
The report has found, as you know, that the expanded global gag rule has resulted in even more unsafe abortions and unplanned pregnancies. Can you talk more about that and what you're hearing from women and girls in Kenya on this issue?
Yeah, so generally speaking, most of the organizations that have refused to sign into the global gag rule were the organizations that were primarily serving, you know, underserved communities and had to reach areas and providing them with contraceptives. So that means that when they refuse to sign into the global gag rule, that means provision of, you know, contraceptives also decreased, which therefore means increase to unplanned pregnancies, because women now cannot be able to access contraceptives as initially they could.
Diana, Francoise was also talking about staff members of USAID visiting the clinic, sometimes sending undercover clients to find out what you're telling patients. Because I asked her, how is this being enforced? If you're in a private room with a client, how does the United States government know if you're referring someone to an abortion provider or even talking about abortions? So what has been your relationship with the United States USAID?
Well, we don't receive USAID funding directly as TICA, but we do work with organizations that are receiving US funding. So what we are seeing is over-application or over-implementation of the global gag rule, because they are afraid not to be compliant, and therefore they are playing safe. So what we are seeing is they do not want to touch anything related to abortion, even post-abortion care, even providing referrals in case of rape and incest. So ultimately, we are seeing really women and girls, even when the global gag rule allows some instances where they can be provided with services, they're being turned away. So we are also seeing these organizations alienating themselves. So we are seeing organizations that are working on abortion and those that are not working on abortion, working in parallel, So those that have been gagged are completely staying away from organizations that are working on safe abortion.
Francoise?
Yeah, and that's fractured a lot of coalitions. Diana can speak to that, where you have organizations even scrutinizing the agenda of a meeting, and if they see the word abortion, they say, well, I can't come to this meeting, which, of course, is over-interpretation and over-implementation of the policy. But if that is going on, the level of fear is that great.
Diana?
Yeah, that's very correct. We are seeing organizations that, gagged organizations that do not want to even appear in a meeting. You send an invitation that has, discussion around abortion, then they will not even respond. So they will scrutinize and want to know more. What do you want to know? What do you want us to talk about abortion? Why? And etc. And initially, that never used to happen. Mm-hmm. So it's really puncturing relationships, and it's making it hard for us to even refer women, and for them to even refer women who, need abortions. Mm-hmm.
So this is affecting women and girls across the board. What resources are available for victims of sexual assault and rape?
So for victim for rape, I mean, as I mentioned before, I think they are suffering as well, because the global gag rule clearly states that it allows for referral in case of rape and incest. So what is happening is we are seeing these gagged organizations not even afraid, and unsure really if they should be able to refer these women and girls that have been affected by GBV. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a huge problem as it is.
Right. They stay away from the whole matter. And, we interviewed organizations in Nigeria with the partner in Nigeria, and they said basically, for us to determine whether a girl or a woman has been raped or not raped, we just don't want to get into it. So we just send her away.
Wow. Yeah. It's sad.
Diana, how has this affected abortion providers? How are they responding to this?
Well, for the abortion providers, there's a lot of stigma around abortion providers, and also in terms of the number of abortion providers has also declined, because some of them were receiving funding from the U.S. government. So now that some decided to sign into the global gag rule, we are therefore seeing a very limited number of abortion service providers, who also, in most cases, are the ones that provide post-abortion care.
In the report from the International Women's Health Coalition, they highlighted an organization in Kenya that provides services to sex workers, and they found that two young women died after seeking unsafe methods to get abortions. Since so many people are turning to unsafe abortions, what are they doing? Diana, are you still with us?
Sorry. Rose, please repeat the question.
Well, I was referring to a part of the report about two young women in Kenya who died after seeking unsafe methods to get abortions. And since we now know that so many people are turning to unsafe abortions, what are they doing exactly?
Well, yeah, It's a very difficult situation, and actually organizations are trying to find other ways that they can be able to refer these women and girls. But it's becoming a tall order, because even funding has reduced, and therefore what that means, even provision of contraceptives has reduced. So generally speaking, prevention of unplanned pregnancy is a challenge as it is. And now when women again get pregnant, then where do they go to, you know, get safe abortions? So that's why, like, for example, this organization that, you know, decided to sign into the global gag rule now cannot be able to even refer, you know, women as they used to, or provide services. And ultimately what we saw is that two women died as a result of trying to get an unsafe abortion.
Mm-hmm. What about maternal mortality rates? Kenya has one of the highest maternal mortality rates globally, 510 deaths per 100,000 live births, and 25% are due to unsafe abortions. How has the expanded global gag rule affected mortality rates?
Yeah, actually, unsafe abortion is the second leading cause of maternal mortality in Kenya. And what we are afraid is that that was even before the global gag rule. So now that the global gag rule is in place, we are expecting these numbers to even rise. Mm-hmm. So it's really very horrific. Wow. And we are scared. Yeah.
Diana, we were talking with Françoise about the importance of getting rid of the global gag rule. And I just wonder, what would you say to our audience, given that the United States government has so much power and affects so many people overseas, and every Republican president reinstates the gag rule, and then if a Democrat comes in, they rescind it. In the case of Trump, they expanded it. What would you say to listeners just about how this administration has really affected people in Kenya?
Yeah, I think, honestly speaking, I don't think the administration really cares about, you know, healthcare, especially for developing countries and people in Kenya. And given that they've been supporting almost 60% of our budget, we continue to really advocate and, you know, rally and talk to the American people to really stand out and talk against this very harmful policy that continues to affect women and girls' access to, you know, healthcare in general. Yeah.
Are you also seeing an increase in conservative U.S. politicians coming to Kenya to push for these policies, because they've definitely done that in other countries around the globe?
Yeah, we are seeing a lot of that as well. And we're also seeing even within, you know, our politicians here in Kenya, there are a lot that, you know, do not want to speak about women, human rights and safe abortion issues, even though they know very clearly that safe abortion is one of the leading causes of maternal deaths in Kenya. So we are also seeing a lot of Western influence that is influencing, you know, healthcare here in Kenya as well.
What are your politicians like when it comes to these issues? Are some of them as bad as the Trump administration? Do you have a wide range in Kenya?
Well, we have quite a number of supportive policymakers that we are working with towards safe abortion, but a huge number of them, because abortion is highly stigmatized, and also looking at religious groups that have continued to stigmatize and demonize abortion. So you find that most of them also are not as, you know, helpful, so to speak. But we have quite a good number that have been supporting some of our advocacy work towards safe abortion.
Final thoughts, Diana. What else would you like us to know about how these policies are affecting people on the ground there in Kenya?
Yeah, so Rose, final thought is this policy is harmful, it is deadly, and what we've seen since it was reinstated in 2017 is just a tip of the iceberg. We will continue seeing increased number of maternal mortality. We will continue seeing increased number of unsafe abortions. So this is a policy that we should all fight against and make sure that no sitting president has powers to ever reinstate it.
Well, Diana, thank you so much for joining us. And I don't know, for what it's worth, I'm so sorry about how difficult this all is. I mean, we have similar challenges here in the United States, where in many states it's very hard for women and girls to access these services. It just, they keep chipping away. So we'd love to have you back to talk more about this. Thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rose, for having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Diana Mareka is a member of Trust in Indigenous Culture and Health in Kenya. They're a partner of the IWHC. Francoise, I mean, just talking to people overseas, knowing what this government is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's pretty shocking, right?
Yeah.
But at least, you know, for us sitting in the United States, we can work with Congress right. to end this legislatively. And groups like TIKA have come to testify in Washington, and we brought those voices to the Hill, and it's been incredibly powerful and helpful. The other thing that we've alerted Congress to is that obviously the money that is not going to groups that were prepared to provide comprehensive health services in those countries has been redirected to very regressive groups, very right-wing groups that are actually, promoting abstinence only until marriage, and are running these crisis pregnancy centers, you know, that mislead women into keeping pregnancies and promising them all kinds of help with the baby once the baby's born, which of course never materializes. And so that is a fact that these regressive groups are actually capturing the money. And of course, it's always about the money.
Mm. And final thoughts, Francoise, people in this country do have the power to do something that
yes.
will directly affect mm-hmm. people overseas, the women and the girls that Diana works with in Kenya.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, first of all, make this a priority of your congresspersons, that when we retake Congress, that this is done as a priority and not, you know, as at the bottom of the list. And get involved. You know, we have to get involved and care not only for ourselves, but for women all over the world, because honestly, we're all in the same boat. They're coming for our bodies. They're coming for our health. They're coming for our rights.
And it is a fact to say that if we do not want more women and girls to die,
mm-hmm. here and abroad.
This, right.
We have to take action.
This administration cannot win next year.
That's
that
right.
is a fact
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
it will continue.
That's right. We can see it very clearly.
Francoise Girard is president of the International Women's Health Coalition and is a longtime advocate and expert on these issues. And you could read the extensive report that they just released called Crisis in Care, Year 2 Impact of Trump's Global Gag Rule. And it is a fact that as a result of this administration's expanded rule, we are seeing an increase in unsafe abortions and unplanned pregnancies. Francoise, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you. Thanks to Leah Cesreen for producing today's show, and Kevin Vance, our studio engineer. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.